You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Good morning, Dolphins, and happy Wednesday. I believe it will be as you're listening to this episode of Dolphins Talk Weekly, almost to our 50th episode. And I know this is supposed to be a weekly show, but if you've listened before, you probably know that my school has cut into the podcasting time. But we are now officially on the back half of the MBA program, so hopefully we'll have some more time open up in the near future, and especially during the 2022 season. Again, I'm your host, Kevin Durn. Follow me on Twitter at KevinMD4. You can follow the show on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. And in this episode, we're going to do a little bit of a draft review, but we're going to do it somewhat differently. There's plenty of great Dolphins podcasts out there that are going to give you the measurables and the relative athletic scores and percentiles and spider graphs and all of that stuff about each of the prospects. I'm actually going to do it a little bit differently this week as we review our picks. And, you know, this show, the inspiration for it is actually sort of a circumstance that happened to me. I ended up buying a different bottle of scotch over the weekend. I've had a friend who's been on me for the better part of a year to try Talisker 10 because he knows that I really enjoy the Islay scotches, the Lagavulin, Lafroig, Ardbeg, the very heavy, peated, smoky, briny, briskety, meaty flavored scotches. And he's like, you'll like this, but it's also kind of like a Speyside scotch where you get some fruity notes at the end of it. So it's Talisker 10. It's from the Isle of Skye. It is the only distillery left on the Isle of Skye. I believe there were 7 once upon a time, but this is the only one remaining. And it's not a blended scotch. It's a single malt. But to me, my friend was kind of on the money where he said it's sort of a blend of both worlds. There is that peat smoke. It is definitely not as intense as any of the Islay scotches. You know, Lagavulin is my favorite. It's probably the least intense in terms of the peatiness of the big three, the Kildalton scotches that I like. But this one's kind of got a peppery, bacony peatiness, smokiness to it. But you end up getting a nice kind of a fruity finish. I've only had one glass of it. This is actually number 2 that we've got right here. We'll take our conclusion of the draft sip, if you will. Here we go. Kind of a pear flavor is what I'm getting out of that. But I'll have a couple more glasses and get back to you guys with a better analysis of that, but I do like it. If you don't like the peaty scotches and you're, you know, trying to step into that world, that realm, and maybe explore them, this might be a good first place to start because it's not going to just overpower you and knock your socks off the way the Kildalton scotch is or something from, you know, like Brooklotics does Port Charlotte. This won't knock your socks off. And so what I kind of wanted to do with this draft review, and to tie it in here in a very long-winded segue, is sort of tie in the players that Miami selected, a couple of the undrafted free agents that signed with the Dolphins after the draft, and kind of give my take on how they may or may not fit into the Dolphins schematically from a roster standpoint. And I'll try and compare them to a player, maybe past or present, that they remind me of. Now, I will be 100% honest with you guys. I have not watched every single one of these guys. I have watched all 4 of the draft picks and a couple of the undrafted free agents. So if you hear a name I don't mention, it's not because I simply think, oh, you know, he's an undrafted guy or he's a seventh round pick, he's not going to make the roster. That's not the case. It's just I've been so busy with work, with life, and with school, I just haven't had enough time to get around and watch them. But anyway, let's dive into it. And obviously, Miami was without a first and second round pick because of the Tyreek Hill trade. And if I remember correctly, the last time Miami did not have a first round pick was 2002 and 2003 in the wake of the Ricky Williams trade. Now, I didn't really start following the draft heavily until, I guess, probably 2005 is probably the first time I ever did like actual research and made a mock draft. I started following it in 2004 just because I kind of knew the names. But that's really it, you know. So we've never really had this circumstance. So to me, you know, if you view it from the philosophy of the Dolphins, if they had to go out and play a game the Sunday right after the draft, they could have done it. You know, they've got a person at every single position, starter and some package, that has started or played in that role before in the NFL, other than right tackle. That's the one position they didn't have covered, you know, and you figure there's a competition brewing between Austin Jackson, Liam Eichenberg, and perhaps Robert Jones, who did start a game there last year, the finale against New England. So when you add someone like a Tyreek Hill like that, you know, it was tough to watch other teams get better throughout the draft. And I sort of viewed it like, okay, Miami's two picks, you know, a comp third is basically a fourth rounder, right? You know, we're kind of splitting hairs there. I think there were only four more picks in the third round after Tyndall was selected. So the odds of you getting like a surefire day one starter at that spot are pretty minimal. So to me, it's sort of like, okay, we might get one guy here and the rest of these, it's basically buying like scratch off lotto tickets. You might win $5, $20, $50 max, you know, and that's great. But does ultimately that's not going to get you into a brand new house or anything like that, or buy a new car, but it still helps you, you know, in the here and now. So that's kind of how I feel like these first two picks are guys that, you know, they have a chance to be contributors. And we'll start with Tyndall. So he's an inside linebacker from Georgia. And, you know, if you didn't know, he rotated with Quay Walker next to N'Kobe Dean. And my good buddy Travis Wingfield posted this after the selection. His three highest snap count games for Georgia were the SEC championship game and the two college football playoff games. So the semifinal game and the national championship rematch against Alabama. So he obviously got more and more time as the season wore on. You know, the way I look at him, he's 6'2", 230, can really, really run. And the comparison I'm going to go back to is someone from the 2010s. It's DeAndre Levy. Now, Levy was an undersized linebacker from Wisconsin. I didn't look up his official height and weight. You know, Tyndall's 6'2", 230. I think DeAndre Levy played at like 5'11", 6', and, you know, really had to try to keep his weight up at 225, but he could run. He could run. And he played in that Detroit wide nine system when they had Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley and C.J. Mosley and Stephen Tulloch and all those guys. And that defense in 2014 was phenomenal. Probably the best iteration of a wide nine defense we've seen in the NFL, other than maybe Philly in 2017 when they won the Super Bowl. Levy was sort of a run-and-hit will linebacker in that scheme. And that's sort of what Channing Tyndall reminds me of. Now, he obviously had some more gap assignment-based tasks to do in the Georgia defense. But when you've got guys in front of you like Wyatt, like Jordan Davis, and Jalen Carter, who, if you didn't know, is going to be a top 10 pick next year, number 88 if you watch some Tyndall film. Tyndall basically had the opportunity to sort of be a run-and-hit guy and kind of shoot gaps. and he's going to be direct competition for Elandon Roberts at the inside linebacker spot. But because of his athleticism, he's going to be able to do a little bit more. And you might see the Dolphins kind of view him and use him sort of both in that traditional middle linebacker role and maybe have him do some of the things that Jerome Baker can also do. You know, spying a quarterback, being able to cover a back out of the backfield or pick up tight ends using robot techniques. There's a great video someone put together. It's a Seahawks fan on YouTube of Tindall's play at the Senior Bowl. And you can really kind of see how he's able to process, and even when he doesn't read the route combination correctly, how quickly he's able to get himself back into good position. Sort of like a trait Xavien Howard has, but this is at the linebacker level, not in the secondary. And he's a good blitzer. I think he had 5.5 sacks. Some of those sacks came from him spying and then pursuing. And I think that's an element that's been missing for the Dolphins, especially when they play the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen. He has absolutely torched us throughout his career. And they've gotten better against him on the ground, but it's those plays that he's been able to make out of the pocket, throwing the football, extending plays. And when you play as much man coverage as Miami does, it's hard to stay with guys that long. And that's sort of where we've seen the troubles creep in when Buffalo's on offense. Now, there's been plenty of other troubles that the Dolphins have had against the Bills, but specifically, you know, when Buffalo's been on offense, it's been Josh Allen's ability to extend plays and make throws. Tindall, in my opinion, gives you another person that you can use to spy and chase down Josh Allen when you play Buffalo. He's got a pretty long frame, and, you know, if you do look at the relative athletic scorecard marks, he's in like the 95th percentile or higher in just about every category other than like weight. He's only 230, but he's got the frame where you could probably put anywhere from 5 to like 12 pounds on him and you're not going to affect his, you know, athletic ability. You know, for instance, Elandon Roberts is listed at 238. He's not that much heavier than Tindall. You know, Roberts is a big hitter. Notice I didn't say great tackler, I said big hitter. But he does have a pretty good knack for shooting gaps, especially in third and short situations and making plays that way. I think Tindall could do that. And the role that you're going to see him kind of take on, and Kyle Krabs talked about this on his podcast as well. Look at what they did last year with Javon Holland and Jalen Phillips. Now, both of those guys did miss significant time in camp. They each missed 2 preseason games. But you had guys in Brennan Scarlett for Jalen Phillips and Jason McCourty for Javon Holland, who had started games at the NFL level before. So they kind of got brought along slowly. And there after the Tampa Bay game is when you really started to see those guys become the players they ended up being the rest of the season. So to me, Tindall gives you an immediate contribution on special teams. Maybe you use him formationally or schematically in certain down and distance situations starting off until he's mastered the defense. And that's really the big advantage Elandon Roberts has, is he's been in this defense both here in Miami and previously in New England his entire career. You know, he knows this defense. That said, Georgia's defense might be the most complex defense in all of football, college and pro. That's not an exaggeration. They do a lot of stuff, especially in terms of the back seven that, you know, a team like the Dolphins maybe doesn't need to rely upon so much because you have such talent at corner with Xavien Howard and Byron Jones. You just don't have to do a lot of that pattern matching stuff that Georgia and really all the Nick Saban tree coaches have done. You don't need to do it because Miami has good enough man corners. So that's really the difference in complexity right there. So I don't think it's beyond, you know, a stretch to see Tindall starting as that middle linebacker at some point this season. I would bet, barring injury, he is the starter going into 2023 on paper, you know, as kind of at the very least but he would be a solid special teamer year one. I think you could find a role for him sort of in the same vein that they've used Sam Egwuvon in third down packages. But I think Tindall can be more than that. So I'm really excited for that pick. And then I did do a live stream with former Dolphin All-Pro tackle Richmond Webb, Reason from the Finside the NFL show, and a couple other guys. This was the first time in probably since maybe, I'm trying to think, maybe the Jake Long pick, because we knew it was coming, that the people I've been around during the draft were actually like unanimously excited for a pick the Dolphins made. Now, I didn't make a draft board. I didn't do like positional rankings or anything like that. I basically made a list of fits for linebackers that I liked. And by linebacker, I mean guys that are off ball, you know, stack middle linebackers, traditional will linebackers. So I had six names written on my board, and Channing Tindall was at the top. And you can check that. I sent that pick out to several people. Not making that up. I had Tindall first, Chad Muma from Wyoming, Darian Beavers, Leo Chenal, Damone Clark, who obviously has the injury that needs the spinal surgery, and then Troy Anderson from Montana State. So I do think it's interesting that Chenal went the pick immediately after Channing Tindall did to Kansas City. So, very happy with the Channing Tindall pick. Very excited to see how they use him. And I do think he puts pressure on both Duke Riley and Elandon Roberts from day one. And I do apologize if the audio is a little wonky this week using my new rig. Haven't had a chance to kind of work out all the kinks. So if there are audio issues, I do apologize. I also apologize for my voice. We've had some wild weather here in the Ohio River Valley. We had snow last Monday. Today, which is Monday the 2nd, was able to take our daughter to the zoo, and it was almost 80 degrees. So within a week, we've had, you know, snow to 80 degrees and sunshine, and it's wreaked havoc on my allergies. But that's neither here nor there. We're going to go into the next pick we had was Texas Tech wide receiver Eric Ezukama. Now, I had not watched any Texas Tech games. I did watch a couple kind of, you know, truncated games after the selection because, you know, I'm a degenerate and didn't have anything better to do and didn't really want to focus on school on draft weekend. So a couple things with this pick. Obviously, Miami is missing Devontae Parker, and I've seen several people tweet out, oh, he's a direct replacement for Devontae. In a sense, yes, but also in a sense, no. He's not really that big, vertical, down-the-field threat guy that's going to go up and win you jump balls on back shoulder fades the way Parker could when healthy. You know, he can do it. Ezukama can do it. But I think his game is going to be a little bit more, I'm trying to remember. I've seen some clips from the Atlanta Falcons when Shanahan and McDaniel were there. A lot of the run playbook that those guys had was carried over to the 49ers, and I would imagine is being carried over by McDaniel to the Dolphins. But they had a lot of passing concepts off of it. I'm trying to remember the receiver who started outside opposite Julio Jones, and I'm just drawing a complete blank off the top of my head. But this role in San Francisco was Brandon Ayuk, and it's basically someone who's going to be able to do what I would consider like the dirty work routes. You know, someone who's going to be able to run a clear out fade if you want to run a sail concept with Hill or Waddle and get them the ball, you know, short and in the flat. He's going to be able to run a backside post. He's going to be able to run, you know, a three-step slant or a bullet slant, which is a one-step slant, and be able to out-muscle some guys to make a catch and maybe make some things happen yards after the catch. But the thing that interests me the most is, I guess, number one, his willingness to be a blocker. If you go back to some of those clips that were circulating before McDaniel was hired, There was one specifically about wide receivers, and he really emphasized their ability and willingness to block. I think Ezukama can probably come in and be the best blocking receiver Miami has day one as a rookie. I was trying to think of a good profile. I saw Chris Kaufman, who's part of the 3 yards per carry crew, mentioned Mohamed Sanu. I feel like he's going to run the route tree that Brandon Ayuk runs, but Brandon Ayuk isn't the right comparison to me. I was trying to think of a good one, and, you know, sort of, if you guys remember Jerome Simpson, who played for the Bengals, he has the famous play where he did the front flip into the end zone over an Arizona Cardinals defender. But someone like that, who's not a huge big body guy, but big enough, someone who can be an X receiver and win against press, someone who can run kind of those dirty work underneath routes or take the top off a little bit, even though they don't have, you know, the same speed as like Hill and Waddle and even Cedric Wilson for that matter, but someone who's going to come in and fill a role. And, you know, for him, it's an interesting pick for a couple reasons, because let's look at the pecking order in terms of receivers and who's going to get the ball in the passing game. You know, one and two are the obvious ones, Hill and Waddle, right? In some fashion, Gesicki and Cedric Wilson are 3 and 4. And from there, you know, you have Chase Edmonds, who's a really good back at catching out of the backfield and even lining up out wide to create mismatch problems. I would imagine they're going to try and get Hunter Long more involved. So you're competing against those two guys. You also have someone like Preston Williams, who is probably the direct competition to the roster for Ezukama. Someone like a Lynn Bowden. And then, you know, essentially what I'm getting at here is the ceiling for him is maybe wide receiver 4, which might be, let's call it, pass catcher 5 when you factor in Mike Gesicki. So you're not going to get a ton of bites at the apple. He does have some good special teams experience, and the blocking ability kind of makes him more of the Mac Hollins replacement to me rather than a Devontae Parker replacement, if that makes sense. I do also wonder, because Chris Greer alluded to this after the draft, about a running back that got away. I believe Isaiah Spiller was picked 2 picks before Ezukama. Because taking a wide receiver there, especially with some of the offensive line talent and some of the DBs, they did bring in a ton of DBs for pre-draft visits and such. Some of those guys that were left on the board, it seemed a little weird to get a receiver like this at that juncture. But like I said, this is, you know, you're getting really 2 cracks at finding someone who can contribute. Your odds of drafting a surefire starter here are pretty minimal. So this, in my eyes, is probably a true best player available scenario for them. I just wonder what would have happened had Isaiah Spiller been on the board. But again, you know, you look at some of these things that Shanahan and McDaniel did in Atlanta, did in San Francisco. You see some of those tight bunch formations where you have a triangle stack with a point man. You're not going to put Tyreek Hill there a bunch unless he's actually running a route, because Kansas City did that. You're not going to put Waddle there. You could maybe put Cedric Wilson there. But if you're doing this and trying to run that old bunch crunch play that John Gruden talks about, or any kind of wide zone action to the bunch side, you want Ezukama to be that blocking receiver at the point. Matt Collins was that this past season. He's gone. So I think blocking in special teams and just kind of being, you know, a team player, for lack of a better term, at receiver is probably the ticket for Ezukama to make the roster, beat out Preston Williams, and be that big body X type of receiver for the Dolphins. Cameron Good, the linebacker from Cal, who was taken in the 7th round. So at this point, we'll take another sip of our Talisker here. Yeah, still getting the pear, maybe a little bit of apple at the back end of that after the peppery, you know, bacony peat. You know, pretty solid little glass of scotch there. I'll give that to Talisker 10. Anyway, so, you know, in terms of the 7th round, if you're thinking about this, who are the contributors that Miami's gotten in the 7th round? Like, it's a crapshoot. You know, Miles Gaskin is a contributor. Jason Sanders the year before. Prior to those guys, you know, how far back in the 7th round do you have to go? You know, the name I came up with off the top of my head was Austin Spittler in 2010 as a special teams linebacker. You know, it's almost like you're basically just drafting guys that are the top of your undrafted free agent list, in kind of in my view. So Cameron Good here is actually sort of a blend of two players to me. This felt a lot like the redo of the Curtis Weaver pick from 2020. Sort of a stand-up, you know, edge rusher guy. Not great against the run, but can do some things in terms of providing pressure. I think Cameron Good has a much better work ethic than Curtis Weaver did. He's gone against better competition being in the Pac-12 than Curtis Weaver did being at Boise State. And Cameron Good actually relies on his hands and has some counter moves. You know, he doesn't just rely on a speed rush and kind of a quasi spin move that Curtis Weaver had. So to me, this is basically them taking a roll of the dice and looking for a developmental pass rush player. You know, Miami's obviously got kind of four edge players or three edge players in Ogba, Phillips, and Van Ginkle that they like that can be pass rushers. They have a fourth in Brennan Scarlett, who's ironically the other guy I would compare Cameron Good to. Scarlett's more of a run stopper, edge setter type. And I think, you know, there's no reason that Cameron Good should preclude them from, you know, keeping that phone open for, you know, Melvin Ingram or, you know, Carlos Dunlap. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. But there's some tools there. You know, he's got some length. The biggest thing, Brennan Scarlett's got 25 pounds of muscle on this dude. You know, Good tries. I think he uses good technique and can play against the run kind of fundamentally well, but functionally well is a different story at the NFL level. That being said, I think there might be some ability to kind of play in the same manner that Brennan Scarlett did for the Texans. The Texans kind of had a hybrid front where sometimes they would slide J.J. Watt all the way out and basically make Brennan Scarlett an off-ball Sam linebacker, like a 4-3 is what you would think of it as. I think Cameron Good might have some ability that way, and sort of something that, you know, maybe Josh Boyer is familiar with from his time in New England. They always kind of had one of those late round, you know, picks. Derek Rivers is the name that comes to mind. There's another guy they had on their 2018 Super Bowl team that they kind of stashed and played. Keon something or other from Chattanooga, I believe. Keontae Davis, I think, was his name. Anyway, this seems like a good dice roll for Miami to keep sort of like a developmental edge rusher around. He's going to have to do something spectacular on special teams to kind of earn a spot, because you look at Duke Riley, Sam McGuavin, Brennan Scarlett, all three of those guys are key special teams guys. So he's going to have to kind of eat into one of those guys' snaps on a team's unit to make it. But I think you can certainly look at him as like a practice squad guy with the ability to develop him and, you know, ultimately, we know the Dolphins want to pay Christian Wilkins. That's going to happen at some point. You're going to have some other players that potentially eat into cap money, like Mike Gesicki, perhaps. So maybe Andrew Van Ginkle, depending on how well or not he does this year, is maybe the odd man out, contractually speaking. So if that is the case, I don't think it should be. I really like Van Ginkle. I think he's developed very nicely as a fifth rounder. But in any case, this is sort of like a quasi-insurance policy for Andrew Van Ginkle. It's a good developmental pass rusher to have. Got some decent instincts and coverage and some of the limited things that Cal had him do. So for a seventh round pick, I think that's fine. After that, we'll get into, really three undrafted guys. As I won't lie, I have not seen Skylar Thompson play. Zachondre White, the running back from South Carolina. Kind of one of the notes I wrote down on the show was, who is that running back that got away? Was it Rashad White at the start of the third round? I think he was like pick 91, 92, somewhere around there. So about 10 picks in front of where the Dolphins were when they picked Tindall. Was it Spiller? Was it someone else? So getting Zachondre White, as an undrafted free agent seems like a pretty interesting fit. I don't know that I've ever seen a more, I just wrote down wild. Like, he's very erratic. Like, he makes some cuts that are just freakish looking. Like, a human being should not be able to do that. That being said, like, zone runs, you have very specific tracks, some coaches call them rails, that you need to run in order to execute your aim point, whether you're going to hit a hole, whether you're going to press it and cut back, or you're going to press it and cut outside. There's a very specific path you need to be on, depending on which gap you're, looking at defensively, or attacking defensively, I should say, that you have to run. I don't think that's a strength of Zachondre White, so it's going to be interesting to see how quickly he's able to pick that up. But like the open field play that he has, doesn't have elite speed, but like it's intriguing. He seems to have a pretty big catch radius when catching the ball. So for me, if we go back to the episodes leading up to the draft, I really like Myles Gaskin as a player. It's a good story as a seventh round pick. I just don't know that he's the best fit for this defense, whereas I think, Mostert obviously is, depending on health. Savant Ahmed is, he was once a 49ers undrafted guy as well. And they brought in Chase Edmonds for a reason and paid him that contract for a reason. I don't think that Myles Gaskin is kind of in that same boat in terms of running style. Same goes for Jared Doakes. So maybe Zachondre White, if he has an impressive offseason and preseason, maybe he can kind of slot in at that fourth running back and kind of work his way up the ladder, is sort of where I went with that. Kellen Deesh, the tackle from Arizona State. I do apologize if I got that name wrong, and for that I will finish our glass of Talisker for the evening. So I believe he originally went to Texas A&M, didn't play a whole lot, went to Arizona State, started at left tackle, longer, leaner kid, kind of built the same way that Liam Eichenberg is. Tall, long guy, except he has a short wingspan. And I'll credit Chris Kaufman, who is part of the 3 yards per carry crew. I saw him tweet about this. One player that Shanahan and McDaniel should be familiar with was former Texans tackle and former Miami Hurricane Eric Winston, kind of the same build. Big, tall guy, shorter arms. Well, Eric Winston's brother, Matt, is like one of the assistant national scouts or directors of scouting for the Dolphins now. There's a good interview from Travis Wingfield, who talked about that leading up to the draft with Matt Winston. So you should check that out. But, you know, I think Deesh's ability here is his foot speed and his athleticism might give him a shot to enter into that right tackle competition. I think at worst, you know, he's probably going to be able to unseat some guys like Greg Little, Keon Smith, Larnell Coleman, and push for that swing tackle job. And who knows, maybe even put some pressure on Eichenberg and Jackson for a starter spot. We'll have to see, you know, how that fit plays out. Haven't watched a ton of him. You know, saw him a little bit when I was looking at Rashad White. You know, but I think for an undrafted free agent, a lot of the draft Nick community, like the guys that I follow in it, all seemed pretty excited about this one. And then the third guy, Verone McKinley, the third, the safety from Oregon. And I guess if we're doing comps here, I kind of forgot Zakondre White. I don't know that I've ever seen a back that is that like erratic. So I'll give you the really hipster comparison here. And kind of the opposite mold. I'll give you Steel Chambers, and that is a real name, Steel Chambers. He is a linebacker at Ohio State right now. Was originally recruited to Ohio State as a running back. Zakondre White, I believe, was a linebacker first at Florida State, I think, before becoming a running back for South Carolina. So kind of the opposite thing, but like Steel Chambers was, you know, very erratic when you saw him take carries for Ohio State, you know, kind of all over the place, not hitting the hole hard enough, not hitting the right hole, ran hard. And they've put that talent to good use because he's a starting linebacker on their defense now. So kind of a weird comparison there. Verone McKinley, it kind of gives me like poor man's Daron Harmon vibes. And another hipster comparison would be Kevin Case Fahorn. I was actually talking to Travis Wingfield about this. Case Fahorn was a fun story on like the early to like mid 2000s Bengals. He was a substitute teacher living in like South Dakota or something crazy like that, and came to like a tryout, and they ended up, I think, putting him on the practice squad, and then he became a rostered player the next season. Always like a backup safety. Very, very smart, instinctive guy. Not a good athlete. Is, you know, bottom of the barrel athlete at the NFL level. But always could make kind of plays because he was just very smart and savvy and able to read route combinations around the ball. So I'll kind of give you like the Daron Harmon / Kevin Case Fahorn spectrum, which is, you know, a Rorschach test, you know, in and of itself. But, you know, McKinley is a ball magnet. It's fun to watch him and Javon Holland. Javon Holland was very excited to see McKinley sign here. For Miami's defense, there's going to be very limited circumstances in which he would be on the field because he just does not have the speed and range to be a deep safety in this defense. So like if you're thinking he's going to compete with Sheldrick Redwine to be the backup to Holland, I think you might be barking up the wrong tree. Who knows? Maybe his instincts are enough to kind of carry that. I just don't see it there. I see him as sort of like a quasi Daron Harmon player. And Daron Harmon was the third safety for the Patriots when they had McCourty and Chung. They would play Patrick Chung down in the box, basically like how Miami plays Brandon Jones now. And Daron Harmon was like the split safety who would sort of be like the hole player, you know, someone sitting at the sticks on a third down to prevent crossing routes while Devin McCourty played deep. I think that's probably that kind of combination of where McKinley can play and maybe be a really good special teamer. Maybe you can develop him into sort of a slot safety in a sense if you want. But to get a kid that's that talented at the collegiate level as an undrafted free agent, I think is a pretty cool thing. It's really just, you know, about the speed and ability to cover ground. Like, you would not want him playing that deep middle role that Javon Holland does now. You know, Devin McCourty for the Patriots, Earl Thomas for Seattle back in the Legion of Boom days. You do not want McKinley in that role. You have to find some sort of split safety or specialized role where you're not asking him to cover a ton of grass. Everything else, though, I think is fair game and on the table. You know, if you want to make him sort of like the understudy to Brandon Jones, that to me seems like something he might be able to do. You know, just a good football player, a limited football player in terms of athleticism, but a good player. So those are the three guys that of the undrafted class that I've seen that I think have a shot to make the roster or at least push guys, you know, in camp and earn a practice squad spot. So next up, we'll have a quick word from one of our sponsors and we'll finish the show with what are the next steps for the Dolphins. Can I get a round of applause, everybody? Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you very much. Today, I'm excited to announce Manscaped has launched their Ultra Premium Collection. Believe it or not, it's for your not-so-private parts. I'm talking about a leveled-up hygiene routine with your favorite manly scent. This is an all-in-one skin and hair care kit for the everyday man and covers you from head to toe, literally. Manscaped is trusted below the waist, now trust them with the rest. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk. We all know how the essential the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 is for that precise trim below the waist. Their advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts to your most delicate areas. But now, you can enhance your perfect grooming routine with their Ultra Premium Collection. This package includes Manscaped Premium deodorant, no, not for your balls, for your stinky armpits. This deodorant dries clear, is aluminum-free, and smells like their signature scent. The hydrating body moisturizer, have tattoos or issues with dry skin? It's designed to keep skin feeling clean, smooth, and smelling fresh. The body wash to lather you up with their infused aloe vera and sea salt shower gel. A 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner to clean your scalp with an easy one step. Plus a free gift, a 3-pack set of lip balm that's made up with ingredients such as vitamin E, peppermint, eucalyptus oil, and to keep those chappers feeling moist. That's 4 products plus a gift inside the Ultra Premium Collection. What a score. All of these products are cruelty-free, paraben-free, vegan-friendly, and dye-free. The best ingredients with zero compromise. I'd recommend using the products in this order. Step 1, hop in the shower and scrub-a-dub-dub that body with the Manscaped Body Wash. Step 2, lather your hair up with a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner to keep your noggin toggin. 3, dry off and spray on the hydrating body moisturizer to reinvigorate dry skin. 4, put on the Manscaped deodorant, for obvious reasons. Step 5, pop that Manscaped lip balm on. No one is out here kissing chapped up lips. Getting dressed after is optional. Wear one great scent all day long. Get that Ultra Premium Collection hot off the shelves. And again, get 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. The power of attraction is now in a bottle thanks to Manscaped. And thank you to Manscaped for sponsoring the Dolphins Talk weekly podcast. We're going to wrap up the show pretty quickly here. So we did have some other news. You know, we knew before the draft that the Dolphins had brought in, We knew before the draft that the Dolphins had brought in former Chiefs and Chargers defender Melvin Ingram for a visit. We know now through Drew Rosenhaus that two of his clients, former Bears defensive tackle Akeem Hicks and former Cincinnati Bengal and Seattle Seahawk defensive end Carlos Dunlap, there have been conversations between the Dolphins and those two guys. So what's left to do, and why do those names factor in? So let's talk about Akiem Hicks first. To me, this is the easiest one. He's had some injury issues the past couple years with the Bears, but when he plays, he's still a game wrecker. And if you look at sort of the moves the Dolphins have made this year, you know, keeping everybody in place, you've basically you've added a run and hit linebacker who can give you more speed and gap shooting ability than a Landon Roberts, you know, down the road perhaps. The development of Jalen Phillips, I think, is a critical factor here, but I think those pieces combined, if you brought in an Akiem Hicks, you could use him sort of in the same manner as the Patriots in 2018 under Flores and Boyer used Danny Shelton, sort of as that backup nose tackle. It also might kind of light a fire under Raekwon Davis a little bit. Davis has been solid, but I think there's more to be had there, and we kind of all saw the former Titans center Ben Jones kind of just give him the business in that Week 17 nightmare. I wish we could just skip Week 17 or have a bye after what's happened the last two seasons. Oh, neither here nor there. But maybe there's something to be had for having like a true big-bodied nose tackle type rather than sort of the long lever type that Raekwon Davis is. So Akiem Hicks would be of interest if he's interested in coming to Miami to kind of be like a part-time player instead of a starter. But who knows? Maybe he's still got enough left in the tank to provide a true competition to Raekwon Davis at that spot. Carlos Dunlap is interesting because he's a 4-3 defensive end through and through. You're not going to put him in coverage and do things like that the way that, you know, they've done with Van Ginkle and Phillips in the past. He's a hand-in-the-dirt player. You might be able to stand him up and, you know, let him rush sometimes the way Ogba does, but he's a true defensive end. I do think it's very interesting that Miami sniffed around so many of the pass rushers kind of in that mid-tier, you know, Alex Wright, Dominique Robinson, D'Angelo Malone. They ended up drafting Cameron Good. They also brought in two other guys in undrafted free agency that are kind of those lengthy edge linebacker position players. So that tells me, coupled that, all of those things with the interest in Melvin Ingram, tells me they were looking for a fourth person to be part of that pass rush rotation. You've got Ogba, Phillips, and Van Ginkle. You know, who's that fourth guy? Tells me that they might still be out there looking for someone who could do that. If you bring in Carlos Dunlap, you know, that's a very specific niche he's going to have to play as a defensive end unless he's a third down player only. I think he had 8 sacks or something like that last year with the Seahawks. To me, all these things combined kind of spell some more 4-man fronts being used. But in terms of what's left for the Dolphins to do, you know, I would say they did bring back John Jenkins and Benito Jones, but let's be honest, neither of those guys is pushing Raekwon Davis. I've been advocating to bring in another big body behind him just to have it. And maybe Akiem Hicks is a step towards that. They clearly seem intent on trying to find some sort of fourth edge rusher type to go with Ogba, Phillips, and Van Ginkle. I don't necessarily think that Cameron Good or Brennan Scarlett is that. So perhaps Melvin Ingram is there. Really, the biggest surprise for me from the weekend was they really didn't add competition for Michael Dieter at center. And they had plenty of opportunities to do so. I think Alec Lindstrom and Donovan West were on the board for both of Miami's 7th-round picks, so that's kind of telling for both good and bad reasons, I think, in terms of why they scouted them and rated them the way that they did. telling that Donovan West got a bunch of guaranteed money to go to the 49ers as an undrafted free agent. Gets to be an understudy to Alex Mack, which is awesome. You know, bringing a veteran O-line help, I think, is probably the one thing that I would look for them to do, specifically at center. You know, they did bring in Ty Clary from Arkansas as an undrafted free agent who played a few games at center, but I think was more of a guard, and that's probably what you'd view him at the NFL level. So those three spots, center, a backup nose, and maybe that fourth pass rusher type, are what's left. And I would also be interested to see what kind of proven outside cornerback depth there is. Miami brought a lot of guys in on pre-draft visits, signed two corners, Elijah Hamilton, though I've been told he's going to get work as a safety starting off from Louisiana Tech, and then Kader Kohu from Texas A&M Commerce. I won't even pretend to know anything about Kader Kohu, but it, you know, if something happens to Xavien Howard or Byron Jones, are you really willing to trot out Noah Igbinoghene again or Trill Williams, who really didn't play much? I don't think it's fair to put Nick Needham out there because he's so good in the slot. You don't want to damage that. So maybe some veteran depth at corner is where I would look at as well. But, you know, I think this offseason, at least on paper, has been one of the best off seasons we've had in a long time. Now, you know, I know in the month of May there are some more OTAs. I think there's the rookie camp is coming up either this week or this coming weekend as you're listening to this on a Wednesday. So other than that, you know, now we're kind of in that weird third wave of free agency post-draft. And then after that, you know, it's kind of the summer schedule and then the long, boring month of, you know, end of June to end of July when camp starts. So we're rolling. And I'm pretty excited about this season. Excited to see how all these parts come together. Excited to see the new offense and how Coach McDaniel operates. Excited to see growth for the players that we already have. You know, kind of a relaxing draft this weekend, but still, I think there's some good that the Dolphins could squeeze out of this minimal class, or smaller class, I guess is the more appropriate term. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Hopefully I'll be back this coming Sunday with another episode for you guys. Thank you. Stay safe. Fins up.